Welcome to The Forum, the Columbus Metro Club's weekly program that cultivates the conversations that drive Columbus forward. The Forum is where Columbus comes to talk. Every Wednesday, The Forum brings together visionary leaders to examine issues that matter, exchange diverse perspectives, and forge connections that create a better Columbus. Want to join us? Tickets and information about upcoming forums are available at columbusmetroclub.org. From research funding to student visas to changes in the national higher education landscape, Ted Carter's first year and a half as president of The Ohio State University has been anything but quiet. In a candid conversation, Carter reflects on leadership lessons from the Navy to the Oval and his vision for Ohio State's future. This week's panelists are Ted Carter, president of The Ohio State University, and our host, Sheridan Hendricks, higher education reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Let's join this week's Columbus Metropolitan Club Forum, a conversation with Ohio State University President Ted Carter.
Can everyone hear us? All right. Thumbs up. I like to see that. Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining us here today. President Carter and I have been joking that we've seen a lot of each other this week, so everything else has just been a warm-up to this moment.
It's a great day. It's a great day to be with each and every one of you, and it's good to be with you again, Sheridan.
Thank you very much. So, as Sophia was saying, we're here at National Veterans Memorial, a perfect venue to have you and have this conversation. And over the summer, actually earlier this month, you recently co-authored a book called Top Gun Performance, From the Cockpit to the Boardroom, tying in your military service and how that has since translated to this second career for you. So I guess to start off, talk to us a little bit about this book and how you have seen your military experience and your time at the Naval Academy inform your career here at Ohio State.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for asking that. First of all, it's just great to be with all of you here today. I see so many friendly faces and people from the community, our entire board of trustees, many of our deans and our senior staff are here. It's just great to be here. And this is a special place to be. It's national, it's veterans, it's a museum and a memorial. I had the privilege of giving the Veterans Day speech here this last year, and it was really special. I was on this very same spot. So to be back here and to have this conversation means a lot to me as a veteran myself. The book was really born out of an idea that happened in my last job, believe it or not, before I was even the twinkle in the eye at Ohio State. We had this idea of tying some of my military experience and translating that into a bit of a self-help book. Whether you're an athlete, a student, a faculty member, somebody that's just trying to find how do you bring out the best in yourself. And what I found in my experience from being in fighter jets to becoming a nuclear engineer to rebuilding and operating aircraft carriers and then getting into this higher ed space is there is a linkage between all of it, all of it. You know, I went to Top Gun in 1985. So think about that. We're talking 40 years ago. I was there with Tom Cruise. The first day he got there, I was his escort because none of the staff wanted anything to do with the movie at all. So as a student or a conehead, they said, Carter, you go out and meet this actor, and we're going to throw him in the swimming pool the next day and see how much we can make him miserable in a fighter jet. And I think about the principles that we learned going through that air-to-air superiority course. It was only 5 weeks long, and it completely changed my life. It changed my life not because it was about what you heard in that first movie about being the best of the best and all those famous Top Gun lines that would eventually turn into Top Gun Maverick, you know, Top Gun 2. It was really about teaching and learning and becoming an instructor, a teacher for life. And it was about taking the principles about being the absolute best you can and taking all of the who out of it and how to raise yourself to the next level. So this book is an introduction to that. And the last point I'll just make about the book, because I'm not going to tell you all to go out and buy it, but you should, it's a not-for-profit book. So all the proceeds from the book will go back to higher education. Nebraska Press, Potomac Books did the printing. So I'm proud that we're going to give back to higher education for those that want to take a look. And by the way, the pictures in the book are really good.
Love to hear that. So I had this whole list of questions prepared for today, and then yesterday news breaks that President Emeritus E. Gordon Gee coming back to the university, coming back in a consulting role. He's going to help with some of your strategic plans that are coming out later this fall, also going to be helping raise the profile of the Salmon P. Chase Center. So talk to us a little bit about how this came to be, you know, who called who, you know, how can we expect to see President Gee hanging out on campus?
So the first thing that you may or may not know is Gordon and I have known each other a long time. Now, I've been leading in higher education. Now, this is my 12th year, so, you know, it's not my first rodeo anymore. Gordon got to know me when I was actually serving at the Naval Academy, and he, along with a couple other well-known leaders, Michael Drake being one of them, actually, were people that were talking to me about, hey, when you get out of that Naval Academy gig and you get out of uniform, you should be in this higher education thing. And of course, my first thought was, well, you kind of have to be invited. You just don't show up and say, hey, I'd like to be the president of Pick Your University. So Gordon was always a good mentor to me, and particularly when I was at Nebraska. You know, when we were starting to navigate the challenges of COVID, that's when we really started to get to know each other. And then, of course, you know the rest of the story. Here I am as the 17th president at The Ohio State University. And I was watching what Gordon was having to do at West Virginia University. He was making some really tough choices there at an institution that was not unlike Nebraska, struggling with enrollment, small population, decreasing population. Their profile at West Virginia was one that they were counting on almost 50% of their students to be out of state. We were not quite that same place in Nebraska. So I just had some empathy for what he was trying to do as he was finishing out his career. And as I knew he was getting to retire and seeing some of the legacy that he left here as a two-time president, I saw a lot of what I was trying to do in developing the standards of excellence here at Ohio State in everything from academics to research to clinical care and maintaining what we already know to be excellence in our athletics. I wanted to still have some perspective from Gordon. So yes, Gordon was recruited to go do what he's going to do for us at many other institutions, to include maybe that school up north that we don't like to talk about. So I called him and I said, Gordon, I don't know what you're planning to do in retirement, but we'd sure love to have you on campus, you know, kind of a part-time, let's call it a consultant role. He's got the ability to be in a classroom still. I mean, Gordon's 81 years old and he still got it. So we came to an agreement that he'd be a direct report to our provost, Ravi Belamconda, and that we could use him in the Samuel P. Chase Center. We could use him at the John Glenn School and even at the Moritz College of Law. So he will be something of an adjunct professor, but also, as Gordon and I have agreed to, he's going to be Ted Carter's wingman. So we're looking forward to having him. He's not going to be here all the time. I know some people thought he might be here today. And the last point I'll make, because, you know, people always think there's a conspiracy theory when we do something like this, like Gordon got rid of a whole bunch of programs at West Virginia because they had to, and that he's going to come here and help us do that at Ohio State. Not true. Gordon's going to come here and be additive to us. So it's going to be a good thing.
Awesome. So like I was saying, President Carter and I have already had the chance to chat a couple of times this week. Good readers of the Columbus Dispatch will see that our conversation from Monday is already in today's paper. So if you haven't read it, you know, maybe do that afterwards.
Top of the fold.
Yeah, above the fold, indeed. Yeah. And, you know, we talked a little bit about AI fluency, a little bit about enrollment, a little bit about student protests. So we're just going to build on that conversation here today. But you know, as Sophia was saying, and as all of us in this room know, higher ed is a very chaotic space right now. It's a very confusing space. But all of us here also really care about higher ed. So, you know, if you had to sum up this space right now in a word or a phrase, how would you describe it?
Well, I'm not going to disagree with your assessment of higher ed. It is a turbulent time for higher education. And I've been very public on this. I had the privilege of being on Face the Nation a couple Sundays ago. I've been in the newspaper. I'm in the Chronicle of Higher Ed. We're talking about this constantly. And most of our colleagues, you know, the other members of the Association of American Universities, those top 71 campuses across Canada and the United States, they're all feeling it at different levels. But I will tell you, for all the challenges that are out there, whether it be fiscal money coming in grants for research, whether it be a decreasing enrollment, international student challenges, we are entering into this new academic year in a position of strength. We are looking a little bit different than a lot of our peers. I mean, if you look across even the Big Ten and our other 17 institutions, most all of them have stopped hiring, frozen budgets, no incentive pays for anybody, and they've even started to shut down PhD pipeline programs because they're worried that they won't have the work for them to do because the National Institute of Health or National Science Foundation monies won't be there. So where is Ohio State in that calculus? We're the opposite. We had an incredibly strong financial year last year, so we're strong financially, and that's a credit to, and I won't take any of that credit personally. I give that credit to my team, to the board, and that doesn't happen just last year. That's over years of being fiscally responsible for how we do things. And think about that for a second. We're an institution that has somewhere between 65 and 67,000 students. And this is a fun fact that most Ohioans forget. 72% of our students are from the great state of Ohio. Our financial model is not built on having 50 or 51 or 52% of our students from out of state, which includes international students. So we're not building our budget based on having students from somewhere else other than our home state. So that's part of a land grant mission. It's really important for us to maintain that. We're going to continue to do that. But it's more important than that. Most universities right now are playing defense. They're worried about what's coming around the corner. They're worried about what's the next executive order. And sure, even in the state of Ohio, you know, we've had to execute Senate Bill 1, implement that here since June 27th. And we've done that. We're ready to tackle that. And that hasn't been done with just, you know, a couple of administrative actions. That took an entire whole of university to get that implemented. And as the faculty and staff are coming back, we're now ready to take that on. We might talk more about that. But the point is, we've got to deal with the realities of what is coming to us from the federal government, from the state, but yet we're in a position of strength. So we're going to be investing in ourselves. We're coming into this year in a position of strength, and we're going to look different than most other universities. Our research dollars and our grants, believe it or not, we're still up, even given all the challenges from this time last year. So, you know, our numbers at the end of the previous year totaled about $1.6 billion in research grants, about $775 million from the federal government, the rest from private industry and philanthropy. We already know right now we're up from that number, somewhere between 5 and 7%. We've had some impact to our research grants in the tens of millions of dollars, and those have impact on individual researchers. And yes, we don't like seeing that. And yes, we're in litigation for some of those dollars to claw them back. But we're talking very small percentage in the big picture of research. And yet we're still up, and we're going to continue to be up. If you look at our academic programs, again, we talk about AI fluency. That's a huge initiative. Let me just give you a little perspective on what we are intending to do and what is actually already underway. Most major universities are talking about artificial intelligence. They're creating some amount of courseware. They might even be building a brick and mortar classroom or some set of spaces dedicated to that. They might be involved in some of the research. We're taking a comprehensive approach to the whole thing. I mean, yes, the headline is every student that comes in with this incoming freshman class, class of 2029, will be AI fluent in their discipline across all of the disciplines that we teach by the year 2029. That's a bold statement. That's the headline. But the real thing is we are going to integrate AI fluency throughout all of our faculty and all of our staff. And we're going to invest in our educational programs to make sure they're available to businesses and the public. And on top of that, we will involve ourselves in the research that'll get after everything from the ethics of AI to energy usage. So we are taking the most comprehensive approach to AI and AI fluency than any other institution, arguably, in the world. This is going to put us on a map in a different way. And don't worry, I've heard the critics. You're just going to dumb down our students. You're just going to make sure they know how to use ChatGPT. This is not that. There's a lot more to it than that. And Ravi and I, one of the reasons I hired Ravi Bellamkonda, he is an expert in this. By the way, we also have had 300 expert faculty members in this space since 2018. So we didn't just start this yesterday. But I'm really, really excited about just that part alone. And then we're going to be investing in other academic programs, some of which we're already best in breed. I'll just mention nursing and veterinary medicine. We know we need more vet meds in the state of Ohio. We produce about 165 veterinarians a year. We're going to get that to 200. And we're going to be attempting, again, very aspirational, to double the number of nurses that we produce at Ohio State. By the way, we're the number one public nursing program in the country, number four against public and all private. So why wouldn't we want to produce more nurses where they are needed across the state of Ohio and the nation? So those are just some of the things that we're doing that are going to invest in ourselves. And to go back to that scene in Top Gun when Tom Cruise is out on the beach teaching his new fighter pilots about how to go into the most high-end combat of all time. You use the line, we're going to play offense and defense at the same time. And that's where we're going. We're going to be playing offense and defense at the same time here at Ohio State.
So to build on that, I was thinking back to a conversation that we had in November, right before your investiture, and the timing of your investiture was certainly interesting. It was the week after, it was in the same week as the presidential election, which wasn't intentional, but the timing was certainly interesting. And when we were having this conversation, you were saying, you know, we get to be the first university in the country to have a microphone after this pivotal election. Yeah. And we want to be able to get out and say, this is what higher education looks like, this is where it's going, and this is what we're doing. And I'm curious, you know, since then, so much has happened, but how do you think Ohio State has been able to take on that challenge?
So this, even the answer to this even goes back to the very reason I wanted to be here. First of all, you all know, because you've heard me talk about this, when the Board of Trustees actually tried to invite me to apply for this job, I actually said no the first time, and not because I didn't want the job, I just didn't believe I was worthy of this job. That's an honest answer. Fast forward here, 20 months later, I am exactly where I'm supposed to be. This is the job I want to have because I want to change the conversation about what the future of higher education is. That election, not knowing what the results would be, was, in my mind, already predictable by what the American public was telling us about higher education. You know, if you go back to 2015, and a lot of you can remember that period of time here because that was the last time, or right after Ohio State won a national championship prior to the one we just won, the American public said at 60% they had confidence in higher education, either at the highest level or high level of confidence. That was only 10 years ago. And then prior to COVID, the confidence in higher ed by the American people started to deteriorate. COVID didn't change the American public. It might have accelerated some of that when we had to go to remote learning for a couple of years. But in 2023, by Gallup, same poll, 32% of Americans said they had high confidence in higher education. That's not a good grade. 1 in 3 said we were okay. 2 in 3 said we were not. And those people said higher education was not going the right direction. It cost too much, questionable return on investment, and for all the billions of dollars of research that was being done at the top 100 research institutions, most Americans couldn't say they could feel the impact of that. So that's what Americans were saying. And higher education leaders, and not to throw anybody under the bus, but they tend to be a little slow to respond to that type of criticism. So when I came here, I wanted to be one of those institutions that said, you know, maybe we haven't always gotten it right. And maybe we can pivot to the American public's opinion and make sure that we, first of all, advertise what great value we bring. I mean, I've been out there talking about 57% of our undergraduates leave with zero debt. And those that do leave with some debt, it's less than $24,000. By the way, those two numbers are 20% better than the national average. And we're going to do better than that. We're going to invest more. Last year, we gave $525 million between state, federal, and our own philanthropic dollars to scholarships. That's 80% of our students. It's a remarkable number. And then when we look at the return on investment, that's there too. And part of that answer for us is making sure that our best talent stays here in the state of Ohio, which is why one of the initiatives that we're going to be talking about in the next 10 years is increasing our internships and make sure we connect our best students with the best businesses. And then when we look at the research arm, we have to do a better job of telling our story. The work that's happening through our medical centers, through our entrepreneurial and our commercialization, we can continue to do better. But the work that we're doing in Alzheimer's and diabetes and Parkinson's and drugs that people become addicted to, we're making an impact, a huge impact. And then look at the agricultural side of what we're doing in extension. This is an ag state. 1 in 8 people in Ohio are in agriculture. So we want to make sure we continue to lead in that space, what we're doing to make our soil regenerative and resilient and get the most amount of crop for the most amount of drop of water that we get in our land. All of that is work that we are going to be doing and doing even better going forward. But today, this summer, Gallup ran that poll again. And for the first time since this deterioration of public opinion about higher education, guess what happened? The American public said an 11% increase that we think higher education is starting to get it right. So who's going to take credit for that? Well, I know the answer is Ohio State. Seriously, we have to go out there and do a better job of telling our story. And what I love about the state of Ohio, because we are the flagship, people really care about Ohio State. So as I get out and about across the whole state, I remind everybody, all of us in this state of Ohio are ambassadors for our flagship. And we have to continue to be the ones that tell our own story.
So much has happened since November. Just as some level setting, I wouldn't blame any of you in the audience if you have blocked spring semester out of your memories. But we had the Trump administration threatening to pull millions of dollars in federal funding from universities across the country, mostly in relation to DEI programs and to curb anti-Semitic actions. We also had international students who, some of which were losing their visas and their immigration status. And then Ohio State is also among a group of universities under investigation by the Trump administration for a couple of different things, alleged anti-Semitic actions, and also failing to end a specific diversity program on campus. There's a lot going on. It's not just Ohio State. It's across the country. Right. And you said recently on Face the Nation that the Ivy League institutions, what a lot of Americans think of as higher education, but we both know there's a lot more to this landscape. You had said a lot of these folks are in survival mode as they're facing fines and the temperature's going up for them. But you had said that Ohio State is fine. You'd said, quote, "We are not going through any of that here at Ohio State, nor do I think we will." So I'm curious, what makes you so confident that Ohio State won't end up in survival mode like some of these peer institutions?
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough world we live in, right? I mean, there's so many things that happen here. I mean, people often ask me, what is your job as a university president? And oftentimes it's to keep the 36 different plates spinning for all the different constituencies that you have to tend to and make sure that you're paying attention to them. That work continues, but a lot of those things you just outlined, those are all real. Those are all things that are out there that impact just about everybody in higher education, not just here in the state of Ohio. The reason I feel that we are not under the same level of scrutiny is because our staff, our faculty, our board of trustees, all the way down to the people of Ohio, we have something that many other institutions don't have. And this doesn't mean that we agree on everything completely, but generally we have this thing called alignment. And alignment is simply when the people of Ohio, when our students and the faculty, and don't get me wrong, I know there's critics of no matter what it is that I do or we do, when they see that we're doing the right things for the right reasons, when we stick to the mission, and let me be clear about this, the mission of Ohio State is to do world-class teaching and learning, provide the best clinical care that we can through our medical center, and to do research that changes and saves lives. That's the mission. So when we're focused on the mission, and not to say these other things aren't really important, they are, and we tend to them, people will say how the state of Ohio goes is through how Ohio State, the Ohio State University goes. So yes, we've had to deal with changing landscape on diversity, equity, inclusion. We've had to pay attention to making sure that our students have First Amendment and freedom of speech rights. We've done all that, but we also have rules on our campus, and I will always hold to the rules that make sure that everybody has access to their education, has access to the clinical care that they deserve, and the ability to move and do what they need to do on our campus. So we've held on to that. That's one of the reasons we didn't have any encampments, and that was part of our space rules that I inherited well before I came here, and yes, we held to that. And guess what? Notice what every other university's done in the wake of that. They've gone and tried to behave exactly like we did. You listed the Office of Civil Rights and those. Yes, right after October 7th of 2023, there were some not so pleasant events that occurred. And yes, there were some investigations. Most of those were done under the Biden administration. We've had plenty of conversation with them. And I'll stick to the fact that our team, through the Office of Student Life, through our security, through everything that we've done, I would argue that we've done it very, very well. And I'm pleased with how we have maintained ourselves, the culture that we're creating on our campus, and I'll stick to that. So we'll continue to have conversation if somebody wants to come and investigate and talk to us anymore. But what we are not seeing is we're not seeing a threat of hundreds of millions or billions of dollars to our budget, which some of our colleagues in the Ivy Leagues have had to deal with. So that's where the background from that answer comes from.
Yeah. So thinking about Ohio Senate Bill 1 came up this morning at Board of Trustees. It has been a tight turnaround to make sure that everything is implemented before students show up on campus next week. Moving in today, but classes starting next week. So there's been some pushback, not just towards Ohio State, but you know, across the board, a lot of faculty members, students, community members saying that, you know, this is a really short turnaround and this rollout is maybe not what folks had wanted or expected. So when students start classes next week, what can they expect on campus related to Senate Bill 1? And how can Ohio State ensure that all of its students will still be supported?
Well, the first thing I'd like to tell our students is the vast majority of what is being implemented through Senate Bill 1 should be transparent to them. You know, everything from what we do in the classroom, you know, making sure that people understand that we are full-on believers of academic freedom, the ability to seek out intellectual scholarship, the ability to go do what we do and teach in the classroom, none of that changes. That's still there, and we hold that. And our chairman of the Board of Trustees talked about it at the Board of Trustees meeting today. Robbie Bellum-Conda put out a great note to our faculty just the day before yesterday. So, you know, those elements are still there. Yes, there's some administrative things there that we've got to pay attention to. Yes, we did sunset the Office of Diversity and Inclusion. We did sunset the Center for Belonging and Social Change. And a lot of that's what's gotten the headlines. But we haven't talked about what came in the aftermath of that. And I'm really pleased to tell this audience, and I have said this publicly, that some of our faculty, a lot of our student leadership, and a lot of our leadership from student life got together and put together a program that would replace that Center for Belonging and Social Change so that it would still have a place for our students to go. The work that was done in the DEI shops over the last few years, you know, a lot of that was really great work. It was. But the strategy now is to make sure that we take not only that work, but now we expand that so that that support happens for all of our students and all of our faculty. So that's the work that we have going forward. And now we have this new office called Buckeye Commons. And our own students were the ones that came up with what should be done in that place. So now we have a place where students can go to get help with resumes, to get help with how to get something that just takes care of them and the personal challenges that they're going through, whether it be mental health, whether it be, again, finding a path to internships. Everything that could be associated with helping our students be successful is now going to be built out of Buckeye Commons. So that's the approach that we're taking in this to make sure that we not only can attract and retain the best faculty and staff that we have, but that every single student that comes on our campus now has the keyword opportunity to be successful, and we will put the resources together to make sure they have that.
You're listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. This week's conversation features Ted Carter, president of The Ohio State University, reflecting on his leadership journey and the future of the university in a rapidly changing higher education landscape. Our host is Sheridan Hendricks, higher education reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. We'll return to this week's Columbus Metropolitan Club Forum, a conversation with Ohio State University President Ted Carter, after a short break.
Hi, I'm Raghav Raj. I'm the student intern here at 90.5 WCBE. Did you know that you can tune into this show on WCBE's new app? Whether you're on the go or staying home, the WCBE app lets you listen to our programming online anytime. For local music, community news, and original podcasts, find WCBE on the App Store or the Google Play Store today.
Hi there, this is Morgan James. Every album represents a step in an artist's journey. Hello, music lovers. I'm inviting you to listen to Music Journeys with Mike Foley. Mike mixes music and conversation with artists to share what informed and inspired their latest project, how the love of music began, what music means to them, and so much more. We've chatted about three of my projects, the most recent being Soul Remains the Same, a soul album of songs you would never expect. You can always expect the perfect combination of music and stories on Music Journeys. The show airs Saturday afternoons at 3:30 on WCBE. Recent episodes are available on the major podcast platforms and the WCBE app. To meet and hear more from all the musicians featured since its start in 2018, including me, to be the first to be featured 3 times on the show. Look for Music Journeys on WCBE's podcast experience at WCBE.org.
Welcome back to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum on 90.5 WCBE. From research funding to student visas to changes in the national higher education landscape, Ted Carter's first year and a half as president of The Ohio State University has been anything but quiet. In a candid conversation, Carter reflects on leadership lessons from the Navy to the Oval and his vision for Ohio State's future. This week's panelists are Ted Carter, president of The Ohio State University, and our host, Sheridan Hendricks, higher education reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Let's get back to this week's Columbus Metro Club Forum, a conversation with Ohio State University President Ted Carter.
I'd be remiss if we didn't have a conversation about athletics. It is Ohio State, after all. Athletic Director Ross Bjork was here a few weeks ago to talk about this new era of college athletics. Ross is in the house. You know, Ross covered a lot, and we could have an entire other conversation about this, but I'm curious your perspective on campus culture and how this new era will potentially affect life for students on campus. You know, you're coming into a situation here where you could have students paying thousands of dollars to attend Ohio State, sitting in a class with student athletes earning up to $1 million for playing at the university. You know, how do you see this playing out on campus? Is there a day where a quarterback is earning more than Ryan Day? How do you foresee this?
I don't see that. But there's no doubt we are in a new era. And, you know, I played hockey in college. Now, I didn't play it to the level that our men's and women's hockey team play here at Ohio State. But, you know, back then I still thought I was playing for the Stanley Cup. So I grew up as a student athlete at Navy. I have an appreciation for athletics. I've been involved in athletics since I was at Navy and Nebraska and certainly here. I love that we have Ross Bjork as our athletic director. Ross has a vision for the future and has been in this space and very engaged. But we have to understand it is a changing landscape. There's no getting around the fact that we're going to have some highly recruited, top-notch players that are going to earn some money. And we've agreed to that. I mean, we agree with the House settlement case with the NCAA. There's still a lot in the landscape that hasn't been settled, and we're still working that. The good news is we have a seat at the table. I am now on the NCAA Board of Governors. Ross is just coming off of being the head athletic director of the nation and leading that organization. We are both very, very involved in the conversation that's happening at the Big Ten. And yet, it's important for us to continue to make sure that we put our values into what has always been amateur athletics. When our athletes come here, they come here first, not just to play their sport, but to go to school. And this was the best academic year we've ever had in our history. Now, we can talk about national championships and football. You know, there's a formula that determines what the academic progress rate is of a program of a sport. Our football team had a perfect score of 1,000 last year and the year before. The year before, yeah, 1,000. 1,000 out of 1,000 points. There were only 2 schools 2 years ago that had 1,000 points. It was Harvard and Ohio State. This year, there's only 1 school. It's us. Nobody else in the country. And we don't talk enough about that. We don't talk about that, you know, our student athletes, which were just a few over 1,000, one of the largest student athlete programs with 36 Division I sports here, are graduating at about a 95% rate. That's significantly higher than the rest of all of Ohio State. So we should be proud of that. And we need to continue to be in the conversation to make sure, as federal legislation is being put together right now called the SCORE Act, that students continue to be students first when they're athletes. Now, I don't deny how we're going to go through this and how we're going to decide how to pay for student athletes, but I'm proud of the model that we've already started. So this year, we are going to apportion $20.5 million to give to athletes. And by the way, the roster numbers are changing a little bit. So we had a little over 1,000, now we're going to have a little less than 1,000. Not every school is doing it the same way. You're not required to all do it exactly the same way. $2 million of that 20.5 are going to go directly to sports that don't generate revenue. And we're going to increase scholarship positions in those sports. So 23 out of the 36 sports that we have are going to get additional scholarship positions, 91 additional scholarships. I'm really proud of that because we're not throwing all of the money into just basketball or football. And by the way, if you're wondering why are we paying so much attention to football, because none of the other 36 sports exist without it. So we not only care about being good at football, we also care about wrestling. We care about synchronized swimming, or now called artistic swimming. We care about fencing. We care about pistol. We care about volleyball. We care about all those Olympic athletes because they're not all going to go pro, but they're going to go out and be great citizens and be great at what they do. So I'm a big fan of how we have maintained our 36 sports. We have every intention of holding on to 36 sports, and that requires Ross to have to continue to think a little bit differently about finances. And we're dedicated to that. We're doing everything we can. By the way, there are only three programs in the country that are even close to where we are. That's Stanford with 35 Division I sports. Does anybody know what the other school is that has 36 sports? Anybody? The Naval Academy. Slightly different financial model. But, you know, I came from that. So I understand the value of the student athlete at a place that only has 4,400 students. And, you know, over a quarter of them are student athletes. So, yes, I acknowledge there are going to be students here that are paying some amount of money to come to this university and some that are getting significant dollars to come and play sports with us. And I don't think, and I'm not in that situation, but I think those students will understand that we're going to have pride in every one of those athletes that come here, and they'll earn the value at which we give them. There's a whole clearinghouse that makes a decision on what the value of a student athlete is. So it isn't just us deciding whether we're going to give somebody more money than Ryan Day.
Thank you very much. It is the CMC's longstanding tradition to take audience questions, so we'll move to questions from the live stream and in-person audience in just a few minutes. If you have a question, you can make your way over to the microphone right now. And if you're joining us on YouTube, please type your question into the chat. Before we start taking audience questions, President Carter, I've got one more question for you.
Yeah, let's go.
So we've covered a lot over the last few days of our interviews together. And I'm curious, you know, if you had the ability to snap your fingers and fix one of those problems right now, what would it be and why?
If I could fix one thing right out of the gate, I'd like to find the right balance between how much a student pays to earn their degree from an institution like the Ohio State University and leave with no debt. I mean, that would be, to me, the ultimate in what we can do in returning that value for every student that comes here. We're working our way towards that. I mean, 57% is a great number. Imagine a world where we could get that to 65 or 70. That's going to take a lot of work. It doesn't just happen. But we're moving in the right direction.
Doug, take it away.
I'll launch us off with this one, President Carter. New York Times columnist David Brooks has called for more collective action by universities and organizations that have been targeted by the White House. Do you see this kind of collective action happening among universities?
I do. You know, we're proud members, as I mentioned, of the AU, of APLU, and of course the Big Ten Academic Alliance. So, you know, where it makes sense for us to be organized together, we do that. And we have done some of that already with the AAU and certainly APLU. And, you know, I'm a proud member of all those organizations.
I'm Scott Whitlock, a member of Metropolitan Club. Two of the roles of the university are teaching and research. How do you personally go about evaluating the effectiveness of your teaching and the effectiveness of the university's research?
Well, that's a great question. This starts to get after what is academic excellence and what is excellence in research? There are a lot of different ways to measure it. Some of it is, very objective, and we do that. I mean, that's starts to get at retention rates, you know, what percent of your students that come in as a freshman stay on to their sophomore year. By the way, last year we had 9,530, I think was the exact number. And our retention rate from that class into this year was over 94%, a remarkable number. So there's a good example that we're creating the right culture and that our students are staying. There's certainly graduation rates at the four-year and the six-year level. Our four-year graduation rate right now is about 73%. We have plans and aspirations to get that to 80%. Our six-year graduation rate is upwards of 86, 87%. And again, we can improve on that. And people might say, well, why do you even want to talk about six-year graduation? Well, because a lot of our students work and they're not able to take quite as many credits. But it goes beyond that. To me, what we should be looking at when we start trying to measure how good are we in the classroom at teaching and learning is, are we instilling the type of culture that creates a curiosity for lifelong learning? Are we instilling in our students the ability for them to leave this institution at the undergraduate level and go on to be great citizens for Columbus, Ohio, and the nation? Are we paying attention to what types of jobs our students get leaving here? We have a tendency to only measure the thing that's right in front of us. We have a tendency not to measure the next level of outcome. And we're going to be paying attention to that here at Ohio State. This is part of how do I leverage the 629,000 living alumni who are the tops of their fields in just about any endeavor you can imagine in this nation and the world. How do we leverage that talent and bring that into mentorship programs for our students to show them what's in the art of possible? And then how do we make sure that our students are getting the best opportunity for jobs? And that this is where I know that when you have paid internships, whether it be here in Central Ohio or across the state, and students get to see what's out there in the employment world, they're not only going to have a much better chance of getting a job, they're going to get a better high paying job. So those are just some of the thoughts there. There's more to it than that. Today we just had our Distinguished Professors Awards today. I mean, it was on full display. Some of the best faculty we have here, and a lot of you know, we're 8,500 strong in our faculty. So not only are we one of the biggest faculties in the world, I would argue we're one of the strongest. Period, stop, all stop. We're that good. So we just need to continue to make sure that we're leveraging the talents of our faculty to achieve some of these outcomes. And if it's worth doing, then it's worth measuring. So we're going to be measuring a lot more of that to make sure that we're moving the needle. You know, on the research side, there is a tendency to measure the size of the grants you get, how much you get from the federal government. You know, you have to put that out there just because now you're doing that peer-to-peer comparison. But really, it's more about, is the research making a difference? Are you commercializing? Are you getting patents? Are you actually delivering the product that benefits the people of, again, the state of Ohio and for the nation? So again, you're going to see us talking a lot more about that. We've got some new initiatives that are going to get after that. We've got a Center for Software Innovation that is really going to start to get after the entrepreneurship that goes with research and applying that to get bigger and better outcomes. So again, there's a lot to do here, but I am confident with the talent that we have here at Ohio State, we're going to continue to just be on this upward trajectory for the culture that we're creating.
Thank you, President Carter. Nancy Nanny, joining us on the live stream audience, asks, we did talk, of course, about Ohio State athletics, but what can you tell us about OSU's future investments in the visual and performing arts?
So a lot of you may know that, you know, we have one of the most storied arts program of any university in the country. I mean, people come here to learn how to play music. They come here to exercise, you know, voice. They come here to play orchestral instruments. I mean, the arts building that Ratmir Timoshev dedicated to us, it's world class. If you've never been in it, I encourage you to go over there and see somebody giving a recital or go over there and see a performance. We've got a new arts performance building that has, even for small performances, I think it's called the Black Box, where you can go in there and see a couple of small stage performances. We are exceptionally good and talented in that space, and I'm really proud of that. By the way, as we're talking about artificial intelligence, a lot of people might not think that, could you apply any of that? Could you apply that to somebody that's going to put a paintbrush to a canvas? Well, maybe not in that particular mode, but AI and some of the tools will help somebody understand maybe more background and research to help them develop what it is that they're going to do in their art. So those programs are going to continue to be very vibrant here at Ohio State.
Hi, President Carter. The Big Ten is issuing the We Give Blood Challenge again this year, where the university that has the most blood donations by December 5th will get $1 million prize. Nebraska won last year because their president had shared with the university what their vision was of the $1 million. So my question is, what would you do with $1 million if we could win the We Give Blood Challenge?
Yeah, I did take note of that, having come from there. Dr. Jeffrey Gold was the head of the medical center there, and congratulations to them. That's kind of what Nebraskans do. They show up. So my response to that for Ohioans is this year, let's show up. There's no reason that we don't win that this year. And if and when we win that $1 million, I would give it back to our research arm within the medical center to go after some of the most important research that we're doing in medicine. I know you took note of that, John.
He's taking notes.
Steve Reynolds, a proud Buckeye alum. In part, I'm interested in understanding what efforts all universities and colleges are making to try to bridge their curriculum so that they're matching what it is that industry is looking for and keeping it fresh instead of the what we've had in place for a long period of time that perhaps has seemed to work, but with so much changing in our daily lives. What is it that is being done and can be done to make sure we're bridging those roles?
No, fantastic question. So as many of you know, we have a wonderful partnership with Columbus State, as we do with all our community colleges. I am a huge believer in community college. We have two children, son and daughter. My son's the oldest. He served in the Army. He came back from service. He went to community college, did very well, and he had the opportunity to go to almost any university in the country because of the success that he learned in community college. So we lived it in our family. We already have a great relationship with Columbus State and how we create bridges and pathways to the unique programs that they teach there that we often don't have here. And yet we still find great, there's over 80 programs today that can bridge between an associate's degree and coming out to finish year 3 and 4 for an undergraduate degree. You'll hear us talk more about how we're going to build on that and expand that here in the coming weeks and months. But beyond just what we do with community college, there's another piece to this that higher education has been a little slow to respond. Again, we talk about the 4-year undergraduate degree, you know, the 11,000 students that are on average here that are in graduate and PhD programs. But there are a lot of students out there, some of them already have a degree, that don't need another 4-year degree. They're interested in certificate programs or something that's very narrowly focused on a skill set that they need. We have to still play in that space, and we are going to play in that space going forward. We have online programs here. Many of them are world-class, particularly at the master's level. We will be looking at other opportunities. Remember, we have 5 regional campuses to include an ag tech institute and then our 4 historical back from the 1960s of the 24 state regional campuses. We own 4. Those are open enrollment, and there are a tremendous amount of programs. But where I was going with this is, we're going to be looking where we can leverage some of our online capabilities because, let's face it, there are a lot of students that are working that don't necessarily need or have to be in a classroom. We need to keep that opportunity. And I'm going to go one more step further. I believe that The Ohio State University should and will be the best, most veteran-friendly university in the country. Number one, and I can say that right here in Veterans Museum and Memorial. What I mean by that, with 200,000 veterans transitioning every year, 7 in 8 of them, the first thing they're looking for is some level of higher education, whether it be an associate's degree, a certificate program, or an undergraduate program. Most of them don't want to leave their hometown or wherever it is that they're going to go work. We should be making it easier for them to come and utilize our services. You're going to hear a lot more about how we're going to go into that space. We're good at it already. We're top 25. I want us to be number one. That lines up with our very large population here in the state of Ohio that are National Guardsmen. We have one of the flagship Air Force bases up at Wright-Patterson. So that fits here for this state. And all of those things are designed so that we're looking at other non-traditional ways to make sure we serve the public with education.
Thank you so much. I'm going to get in trouble here, though, for ending with a statement.
Ohio.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for being here and not only sharing the challenges, but also the incredible optimism about the vision of Ohio State University. I'm Margie Pizzuti. I am the retired CEO, 15 years at Goodwill Columbus. I just want to let you know I was your height when I started my job 15 years ago. But I enjoyed every moment of it. Share with us a little bit about what you see in addressing the issue of housing, both for students, faculty, at Ohio State.
Yeah, this is This is a landscape that's changing. I think you framed it just right. Remember, here in Central Ohio, we are a growing community. I mean, a lot of people believe that we are going to grow by 1 million people in the Columbus metropolitan area over the next 10 years. That's a big number, where we're already at roughly around 2 million, again, in the metropolitan area. So housing is going to continue to be a challenge. And as somebody that's deeply involved in the partnership, Downtown Columbus, Inc., many of the other local and community organizations, this is a topic that I get into often. And yes, we are responsible for doing a tremendous amount of housing on our campus. So a lot of you know it's a pretty exciting day. It's the first day of move-in for the incoming undergraduate freshman class. I think we're moving about 4,500, 5,000-ish today, just today. And that's over 4 days. We'll move 15,500 students into housing over the next 4 days. As I like to say, that's more than three aircraft carriers worth of people. So it isn't just about the logistics of doing it. It's about what is the quality and what is the quality of life that they get in living on campus. We're always evaluating. We're always trying to be the very best that we can. We do have some aging dormitories. I mean, we, believe it or not, still have some dormitories that don't have air conditioning. Now, that's a rite of passage. A lot of parents are very proud that their sons or daughters go to those dorm rooms because that's what they lived in. Totally get it. I was one of those. But I want you to know that we are keeping an eye on the long game. We are looking at what are we going to create on campus long term. Is housing 15,500 students the right answer long term? Is it better to have a few thousand left and have a higher quality level of dorm? These are the questions that we are really exploring. And then, of course, as to get to your other question, there's all this housing being built all around us, on our perimeter, if you will. What's our responsibility in working with those landlords, with those people, to make sure that we are getting the best deals for our students, sometimes including our staff and faculty? And that's the work that we continue to do. I'm really proud of how hard our team works to make that the very best that we can be. And, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of times we find that students will leave us because they are just short a couple hundred dollars because they can't meet their rent, or they're going through food insecurity, or they're going through other things that they should be buying for themselves, but they can't because these other goods and services cost more. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that if you looked at the price of tuition and then the cost of everything else, it was about 50-50. That is no longer true. The cost of living, either on campus, off campus, food, parking, all the rest, not tuition, is now thousands of dollars more than the tuition. And that's the reality of cost of living, supply chain, all the rest, most of which we can't directly control, some of which we can in what we charge our students for on-campus living, which I think we give incredibly great value. But again, we have to constantly evaluate this and make sure that we're providing the best. The good news is students want to come here, and students want to live on campus. You know, we make it a requirement for our freshmen to be on campus. Melissa, I think we're about 60 to 65% of our second year students live on campus. We call it a requirement. That might be, you know, a little bit verbiage as opposed to, you know, who's actually required to be on campus all the time, but they want to be there. So that's part of the experience that our students want to come to The Ohio State University. And this last year, we had a record 88,000 applications for this incoming freshman class of only 8,200 plus. So the desire to be here is very high, and we're going to keep going at that to make sure that the experience of being on campus is as good as it can be.
All right. Well, we could keep this conversation going all day. I know we could, but I'm getting the wrap-up signal from Doug, so I'm going to turn it back over to Sophia.
You've been listening to the Columbus Metropolitan Club's weekly forum. This week, we explored the future of Ohio's flagship university with President Ted Carter. From his Navy service to the Oval, Carter shared insights on higher education's role in Ohio's economic and civic life. We're grateful to this week's panelists, Ted Carter, president of The Ohio State University, and our host, Sheridan Hendricks, higher education reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. This forum was made possible by the Joseph and Carol Aludo Civic Engagement Fund focusing on higher education. This forum was also sponsored by The Ohio State University, the United Way of Central Ohio, and Columbus Business First. The presenting sponsor of our live stream was the Center for Human Kindness at the Columbus Foundation. CMC's live stream partner was the Columbus Dispatch. This forum was also supported by the National Veterans Memorial and Museum. Join us next week as the not-for-profit Columbus Metropolitan Club once again connects people and ideas through community conversations. I'm Doug Buchanan with CMC. Thanks for listening.